It's inevitable that at the end of every year, when the crop of films that are in the front running for awards consideration are gathered and examined, there's always a good 3 to 4 that completely escape my comprehension. They're rarely films that I think are bad, but there's always a handful that I'm fine with or felt unenthusiastic about that the general population seems to be completely crazy about. Pan's Labyrinth and Children of Men were films that topped a number of critics' lists in 2006. I thought they were fine, but I didn't feel particularly opened up by either of them. A few years ago, I thought that Beasts of the Southern Wild didn't live up to the promise of a very good trailer, but I seemed to be in the minority when it earned a bunch of Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, while this year, everyone is going gaga for La La Land, and I can't say I share the enthusiasm.
What were we saying?
Rare.
Oh, by the by, I saw the most wonderful idea for Christmas presents at the chemist. Gift tokens. Medical gift tokens.
Oh, that sounds marvelous.
It's good at any doctor's, most of the major hospitals. It's also accepted for gynecological examinations, including cesarean section.
I don't know what to say.
The captain of movies that people are crazy about that I really don't give a good goddamn about is Brazil, Terry Gilliam's 1985 dystopian fantasy, whose production and release were about as complicated as its twisty, but to me, pedantic plot. Jonathan Pryce, never as good a fit on film as he is on stage, and even then I find him something of a ham, plays an exasperated bureaucrat dealing with a creatively art-directed world that is part George Orwell, part Dr. Strangelove. In the totalitarian state in which he lives, one where Brazil exists as an idea of an exotic getaway beyond most citizens' reach, Price notices a clerical error that gets an innocent man arrested and decides to have the situation rectified. His intention is merely to correct a document, but what results is having an entire system tumble down on him instead of being honest about its own flaws. Does it sound a bit heavy-handed? Well, it is. Gilliam's script brings the playwriting genius of Tom Stoppard on board, but can never play with the kind of wry sarcasm that the story deserves. Perhaps this is intentional, and perhaps this is even the appeal for many viewers. I'm sure it's possible that there's a humor to its obvious allegory that I'm just missing out on.
It's not subtle at all. It's said, you know, government has too much control, and it's too big even for itself.
That was media educator Mike Gilman, who I asked to speak on this episode as he is a fan of the film, and I wanted to know more about his experience with it.
First saw it when I was quite young. I couldn't tell you the exact age, but my dad had a copy of it on VHS, and it was probably one of those things where I was bored and we didn't have cable, but we had some tapes, so I just picked out one I hadn't seen before. I'm sure I didn't get much out of it the first time. I've probably seen it 5 to 10 times now, and it's one of those movies where I feel like I pick something new up every time I watch it. You know, the social commentary and the art direction especially.
The imagination with which Brazil tells its story includes not only the production design, but some nifty makeup effects, like the most famous image of the film, that of Catherine Helmand having her cheek stretched out around her face. It's certainly not something that I can't appreciate. Supporting performances by the likes of Robert De Niro and Bob Hoskins don't do much harm either, but there's no denying that Price's colorless performance being accompanied by an equally dull Kim Greist does not help you get into the action, no matter how creatively it is put together.
Well, I would say it can be a very hard movie to love, I think. It's very cold, it's jarring, its message is kind of over the top, slapping in the face with it. And I can definitely see that not everybody's going to be into it. When I watched it as a kid, like, I didn't get, you know, all the dream imagery when he's, you know, flying around and, you know, there's that giant sort of robot samurai and everything. I was just like, what is happening? I don't get it. It is quite bleak.
Yeah.
And you can see why the studio changed the ending.
My name's Lowry. Sam Lowry. I've been told to report to Mr. Warren.
30th floor, sir. You're expected.
Anyone to search me?
No, sir.
You want to see my ID?
No need, sir.
But I could be anybody.
No, you couldn't.
I've tried really hard with this movie. After the first time I rented it on video, I rented it again. I watched it a few times, actually, to make sure that I didn't like it. And then when Criterion began releasing DVDs, they did what Criterion did best. They put out a box set, and I learned the story of Brazil's convoluted production.
Yes and no. Officially, only central service operatives are supposed to touch the stuff. Would you hold this, please? But nowadays, with all the new rules and regulations, they can't get decent staff anymore. So they tend to turn a blind eye, as long as I'm careful. Now, mind you, if ever they could prove that I've been working on their equipment. Well, now that's a pipe of a different color. But wouldn't it be simpler just to, you know,
work for me, please?
Sorry, yes.
In the fall of 1985, director Terry Gilliam and Robert De Niro went on Good Morning America to promote their forthcoming project, Brazil, which was not finished and had no release date. The problem was that Gilliam was having conflicts with Sid Sheinberg, then studio head at Universal, who wanted massive re-edits before he felt the film was ready for release. The show's host Joan London asked Gilliam if it was true that he was having trouble with the studio about the final cut, and Gilliam said, "No, I'm having trouble with Sid Sheinberg. Here is an 8x10 photo of him," which he then held up for the cameras. This gives you an idea of how pleasant the dealings were between these two. Sheinberg found the film too pessimistic and probably too confusing, and had his own people cut it into what is now known as the Love Conquers All version. Gilliam, knowing that this was happening, immediately got started on getting his director's cut distributed around on videotape to the right people to see. Then when he was asked to give a talk at a USC film class, he brought his version to show as an audiovisual aid. Universal had gotten wind of these plans and announced that the screening would not be permitted. Gilliam negotiated with executives during the actual class, who eventually relented, and the film was shown in his version a number of times over the next couple of weeks, which then led to the Los Angeles film critics naming it the best picture of 1985, despite the fact that Brazil did not yet have a release date. Sheinberg eventually could not release the cut version and put out Gilliam's vision instead. The results earned 2 Oscar nominations, critical acclaim, and a cult following.
Whether to have the number 1 or the number 2. What do you recommend, Scarlett?
Between you and me, madam, today the number 2.
Thank you, Scarlett. Shelley, what are you going to have?
Between you and me, mademoiselle, today the number 1. Madame Lowry?
Oh, to hell with the diet. I'm going to have a number 8, please.
A most perceptive choice, Ida. I must say so, madam. Monsieur?
Steak, it's rare. Mother,
Monsieur Kel,
I don't know which number. Mother, please.
What Criterion does with their release of Brazil is put it out in the best possible conditions for me to appreciate it. A 3-disc set with hours of extra footage, including the 142-minute cut supervised by Gilliam himself, plus the Love Conquers All version for comparison. I watched every minute of every disc and at the end was aware of what made the world flock to this movie, but I still don't care. Just to be clear, though, Gilliam's film is an experience that I don't really care for, while the Love Conquers All version is absolute garbage, and aside from my belief in an artist's right over their own work, I have to say that I understand that film is a business, and I'm still glad that Sheinberg's hand was forced because his version was super shitty.
I would describe it as a cult movie. It's just one of those things where some people are going to like it and then really like, and others are just not going to be into it like any other cult movie. And for me, I've always been a big fan of dystopian sci-fi, mm-hmm. and Brazil is often compared to something like 1984, which I liked very much. I prefer Brave New World or We as far as, you know, dystopian sci-fi almost, but it sort of fits right in with those 3 books for me. And it's you know, this bleak vision of the future, which, you know, it's never going to come to pass. Exactly. Like, it's interesting the way somebody sort of sees that future.
A few years ago, I made friends with a fellow movie lover, and I have to say that even though we bonded over a number of movies we both loved, and for each having detailed knowledge of older movies that a lot of our friends didn't have, the thing that endeared me to him was that when I mentioned that there are movies that so many people love and I just don't care about, he looked at me and just said, "Brazil." It's possible that Gilliam is just not a language that I speak. I'm not thrilled by Time Bandits either, and I think The Adventures of Baron Munchausen is a beautiful mess. as opposed to the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, which is just a plain big old mess. I try to keep my opinions of his films to myself because Brazil and Gilliam are one of those things that, when you say you don't like them, it tends to inspire people to lecture you about why you're wrong. My favorite film of Gilliam's, and one that I think works on all levels, is his creative and terrifying 12 Monkeys from 1995, a remake of Chris Marker's La Jetée. And it should be pointed out that 12 Monkeys was made for Universal while Sheinberg was still its head, so even if Brazil doesn't have a happy ending, at least the people most affected by it seem to have come to some kind of peaceful union.
Fight it, son. Confess. Quickly.
Just on the subject of films that take you out of popular consensus, I asked Mike if there was a film that he felt that everybody liked that he didn't.
I didn't really care for Moonrise Kingdom, but I don't know if I'm alone there or not. That one didn't do it for me, and I've seen it the once, and all of his other films I've watched on multiple occasions.
They do say that no two people ever see the same movie. I guess it's just one of those things. Thank you for listening, and thank you to my guests for sharing their experiences. To hear more episodes, subscribe to My Criterions on any podcast application. If you subscribe on iTunes, please consider leaving me a rating and/or a review. To find more of my film writing, please visit me on the web at www.myoldaddiction.com.